Welcome to the latest episode of What Exactly Am I Watching Here, a proud member of the Overthink Podcast Network. I'm your host for now, Jason Helms, and I'm no longer a lonely soul, as I am joined by my good bud, Dominic Lang. Say hi, Dom.
Hey, Jason. Good to be here.
Through the dark of futures past, the magician longs to see one chance out between two worlds. Fire, walk with me. I'll catch you with my death bag. You may think I've gone insane, but I promise I will podcast again. Before we begin, a quick introduction to the show. What Exactly Am I Watching Here is a podcast that features an expert, myself, and a novice.
Myself.
Watching one of the great shows of television history. As Agent Cooper told Audrey, the foundation of any lasting relationship is friendship. And the foundation of any lasting friendship is television. For now, our show is the cult favorite, Twin Peaks. We're diving into season two. We're on the back half today. But we encourage you to check out the show for yourself, available on Amazon Prime and Netflix. Go stream. Go nuts. Listen to our previous episodes and come up with some of your own theories about this strange and wondrous place called Twin Peaks. Dom, you want to tell us where we left off?
Yeah, so we are through episode 13 of season 2. And this episode 13 culminated in a shootout where Jean Renault, who figured so very prominently in the past, in season one and early parts of season two, is killed. Season two MVP for me so far, Dennis / Denise Bryson, as so wonderfully played by David Duchovny, saves the day in that one. Shortly after the shootout, there is an explosion and power outage, where during the power outage, two things happen. One, Leo Johnson seemingly wakes from his coma, and two, Cooper discovers a dead body in the police station with the body's finger pointing at a chessboard, a seeming hallmark and calling card of one Wyndham Earl.
All right. Wyndham Earl's back on the scene, and it seems like things are really looking up for old Leo. He's had a rough season so far.
He's had a very, very rough season.
So let's get ourselves a cabin, a couple of venison steaks, and some sparkling wine, and let's get into the episode breakdown. We'll begin with episode 14 of season 2, Double Play. Cooper confides to Truman his past experiences with a Wyndham Earl. Leo awakens from his coma and finds a new cause in life. Audrey strikes a business deal with Bobby as they attempt to save Ben's sanity. When Evelyn's husband is killed, James realizes he has been set up. Thomas Eckhart, who is Josie's former lover and the man who attempted to kill Andrew Packard, appears, and Wyndham Earl is revealed. Man, I cannot believe how many storylines we have going on.
Yes, we do. And for me, what I actually really appreciate about this episode is it really does feel like it's setting up, if not an end game, at least really setting up the kind of like honing in of season two or focusing in of season two, that being Wyndham Earl.
Yeah.
And the kind of going through the crime scene, Sheriff Dale Cooper, not Agent Cooper, Sheriff Cooper, who is now appointed as part of the Twin Peaks Police Department in a really cool move, gives information to Sheriff Truman about Wyndham Earl. And I think his description is incredible. And it has both admiration and terror. Like, Cooper knows how brilliant this man is, and he also knows how dangerous this man is.
Yeah, he tells the sheriff that Wyndham Earl's mind is like a diamond, which makes me think that John McCrae of Cake would probably have a little bit of a crush on Wyndham Earl. Thank you!
Oh my gosh. I want a girl with a mind like a diamond. I want a girl who knows what's best. Well played, Jason, well played. Mind like a diamond, eyes that burn like cigarettes.
Cigarettes. So it's not Sigur Rós, because that's what I always thought.
Eyes that burn like cigarettes. Cigarettes.
All right, so back to Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks. So this is actually one episode where I definitely saw kind of Twin Peaks influence on later shows. So the end of episode 14, Leo, guided by owls, looks up, sees an owl, stumbles into a cabin. And this very much echoes for me season 3 of Lost, wherein Locke meets Jacob, quote unquote, in the cabin.
Yeah.
I think it's the episode is Man Behind the Curtain. And there's the is a confrontation in a cabin. And something I noticed while watching this episode is that when you meet Wyndham Earl in the cabin, he is dressed in his FBI gear, or like black suit, black tie, white shirt, almost kind of like a bizarro version of how we meet Cooper first. Like Cooper's the ultimate G-man, like hair perfectly put together, this like the shirt, everything is to the letter perfect. And Wyndham Earl's wearing the exact same uniform, the exact same image, but it's dirty, it's wrinkled, it's been through, it's a kind of the flip side. And
a dark reflection.
A dark reflection. There you go. And for me, that was just something like, okay, kind of a subtle moment, but a really clear moment of just to kind of like visually note the difference between the two men.
As you say things like that, I just want to every once in a while ping you and say, hey, remember that you said that when we get to the finale.
Okay.
Just putting that out there. Okay. That's an interesting insight that you have visually that I think bears on some of the ideas expressed in the finale.
Wonderful. And then, okay, so Major Briggs, I think just because I really appreciate Major Briggs kind of reminds, he seems like a monk in the military for me. Like he has these two sides to him, or two elements to him. And he comes back from his questioning very distraught because he has for a long time pledged allegiance to the Air Force and has taken his oath seriously. Yet when he comes back from his questioning, he is disillusioned because in his words, the Air Force's search for the White Lodge is not ideologically pure and very much questions the motives of the Air Force in terms of trying to discover as much knowledge as they can about the White Lodge. And so it kind of goes off and wants to go off on his own to discover as much as he can. And so he is very much trying to walk a pure path.
Yeah.
While very cognizant of the fact that dark things are ahead.
Yeah. Your description of Major Briggs, which I think is right on, monk in the military, reminds me of Mitsuta Masahide, a 17th century samurai poet.
Of course it would.
I ran across a quote from him this week and I really enjoyed it. My barn burnt down. Now I can see the moon.
Hmm.
So, you know, you find something nice in the destruction around you. Someone burnt down my barn, but hey, I've got a much better view of the moon now. That feels very Major Briggs to me.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting.
Definite warrior poet.
Yeah. Ooh. I like that. Warrior poet. Well done. Cool. Episode 15?
Yeah. Oh, James has been set up for murder. I just want to touch on the storyline real quick.
You do, I don't.
Yeah, when last we checked, you hate it. Things looking up at all?
No, things are not looking up at all.
We are good. Let's move on to episode 15. Just want to see if, you know, at least it's moving forward now. It's not just treading water.
True, yeah.
All right, episode 15, Slaves and Masters. Cooper finds some evidence about who shot him and gets help from Pete, the town's resident chess master, in matching wits with Wyndham Earl in the deadly chess game. Donna makes a desperate plea to save James, who is suspected in the Marsh murder. Shelley returns to work. Nadine breaks up with Ed in favor of Mike. And Catherine uses Josie to lure Eckert.
So this episode has a continuation, or I guess a finale, of the Ben Horn psychological break plotline, in which he believes he is a general in the Civil War. And that this plotline seems to me the story that has aged the worst out of the entirety of the show. I think at a base level, like a character having a psychological break, I mean, I guess it's similar to Nadine in the sense that, like, Nadine is having a break where she believes that she's a high schooler. Ben Horn is just having a more severe break in which he believes himself to be a Civil War general and actually, like, trying to rewrite history.
Yeah, not just any Civil War general, but a Confederate Civil War general.
A Confederate Civil War general. And while we're talking about the Civil War, I would like to plug another podcast. Yes, I would like to take this plot line opportunity to plug a new podcast called Uncivil, which I've been listening to and so very much love and very much enjoy. It is taking myths and stories that you've heard for so long about the Civil War and deconstructing them and revealing new insight, new information. And it's incredibly well done, incredibly well put together, and I would wholeheartedly recommend it.
Yeah. Have you listened to an episode of that called Spin yet? It's the one all about the Lost Cause.
I have. That episode in particular is amazing. That's
the one to start with. I mean, they're all really good, but that's so solid. All right. I wanted to mention that episode because it plugs in really nicely with what you're talking about Ben's insanity. Which is Ben is just reenacting the Lost Cause myth of the Civil War.
Yes.
He's got these really gone with the wind ideas of the South during the Civil War. And in a sense, I wonder if Lynch isn't toying with that about the nation's insanity. You know, the nation keeps reliving these and has to retell itself. It can't live with what it's done. And so it has to retell these stories to try and fix it. If so, Dr. Jacoby's remedy is probably not a good one, which is just go through the fantasy completely and pretend that you won. Just go through the fantasy completely and pretend that slavery was never bad. That's probably not the best advice.
Wow. Dr. Jacoby is so cool.
not someone we should trust, I think.
He's not someone we should like rely on in terms of sound psychological advice.
Yeah.
But not that. Oh, man. That's just super interesting to me all of a sudden.
Yeah, and with Twin Peaks taking place in, northeastern Washington, you've got that kind of the way that the Confederate cause has been taken up by rural areas, small rural towns, and the people in them, people who feel left out by big government and by urban areas. So even though, you know, Washington, the state, did not side with the Confederacy during the South, if you go and hang out in Snoqualmie, I bet you could find a Confederate flag or two. And somebody will have to correct me on that, say, no, every single person in Snoqualmie is exactly the same. And I say that mainly because of my knowledge of Oregon, which can get super nationalistic.
Yes.
There's a pretty big white nationalist movement in Oregon. I don't know about Washington in that way. I know Oregon was founded as a white state. In a sense, this comes out more in the secret history of Twin Peaks. One of the things that Lynch is playing with a lot is the atrocities committed against the Indians in Washington, and particularly the Nez Perce tribe. And so when he talks about the good in the woods and the evil in the woods, it's a lot more about the good and the evil within us. He's not going to paint this noble savage kind of view of the Indians there and say they are good and the white man is bad. But he's also not going to cut the white man any slack. He's going to say there was a lot of evil that was done. And it doesn't need to be measured out into, but there was also some. No. It's lots of evil and we need to address that is much more, I think. At least that's the effect I get from reading The Secret History of Twin Peaks, which begins with Lewis and Clark meeting the Nez Perce Indians.
Yeah. And, man, like our inability to face what we've done.
Yeah.
Like our inability to accept the wrong that we've committed and the transgression that we've done. And then we just put all of our effort into telling an alternate story. See, now it makes me wonder more like what's going to happen to Ben Horn because like, is there going to be consequence for him almost kind of like closing the loop on a lie?
Yeah.
And like, does that mean that his like healing or his curing is built on shaky ground?
Mm.
Because that would be interesting. That would be interesting to me. Of like, and I'm sure, and Catherine kind of kicks the tires of his conversion later on. I'm just like, I don't really think you believe what you're saying. And there is even that small scene, I think in 17, episode 17, where he meets with Donna's mom. Like, he shows up at Donna's house. And that's like, that's the first time you've seen something. But like, again, does that mean like Ben Horn's kind of back up to his old tricks? Like, is this conversion, the conversion, like one more layer of deception?
Well, you should listen to your friend Billy Zane.
Yeah. Oh, you mean John Justice Wheeler?
Yeah, Jack. What does he tell Ben to do? Ben asks him how to be good.
Oh.
He says, tell the truth. And then Ben's, oh, that's good. That's good. Which is funny because that's not what he's been doing. Yeah. That's not where his healing came from. It came from leaning into the skid of the lie.
Yeah.
And then he says, tell the hardest truth first. Oh, that's good. That's good. So, I mean, that could, again, reflect on, you know, kind of the concepts, the ideas that we've been talking about here. Mm-hmm. About the way that America, this is about small town America. This is about the American dream in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. The way that America needs to address its own past and needs to tell the hardest truth first and start there. Which, for my money, would be talking about slavery.
Yep.
You know, we could also talk about Indian genocide. But you know, these are some really hard truths, and I'm not sure we need to measure out which one needs to be told first. But let's tell some truths.
Agreed. Fun fact about episode 15, directed by Diane Keaton, actually.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. Just little things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Episode 15, there is a scene with Josie and Coop and Truman. Coop and Truman are questioning Josie, and it opens with a slow motion shot of Josie's hand, like almost like nervously rubbing, or like on like the wood of the desk or wood of the table.
And it's like a driftwood table, if I remember right.
Yes. And like, maybe I'm just grasping at straws here. However, at the end of episode 16, based off of where Josie ends up, like, and just the like elemental nature of some of the things in Twin Peaks, like the fact that, okay, well, spoiler, Josie ends up dead in wood. Like, she's like, there's this weird kind of moment. Like, I don't know if that was on purpose. Like, I don't know if that kind of connection was there. I saw that. No,
I think it's a great one. The wood, I'm realizing as you say it, actually has a really, really firm connection with death in Twin Peaks, beginning with an initial shot of Laura's body being found next to a log that's washed up on the shore next to Pete's house, right? As he walks out.
Yep.
Pete and Catherine's house. And then we've got the idea that the woods are evil. We've got the log from the log lady, the log being perhaps her dead husband and his soul. I mean, there's a lot of connection between wood and death, there's certainly some kind of theme going on there.
Definitely. Cool.
Shall we then continue to episode 16 and see Josie meet her demise?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Episode 16, The Condemned Woman. Ed proposes marriage to Norma. James and Donna break up. Audrey is reunited with a handsome, wealthy admirer from her past. Wyndham Earl mails a poem to Audrey, Shelley, and Donna. Hank is arrested for Leo's murder, but points a finger at someone else, and Josie is forced to meet with Eckard, an encounter that ends in tragedy.
Yeah, what you're talking about in 15J about the inability to face what we've done, I feel like Donna's goodbye to James is a really, moment of emotional maturity for Donna.
Mm.
And it redeems a lot of Donna's story for me up to this point in season two. For the majority of season two, Donna has been sidelined. And to have this moment with James where she knows that he has to go. And she tells him, like, you're going to make memories and you're going to have stories, and none of them are going to involve Laura or Madeline or Evelyn or this place or me. And, like, you need to go elsewhere. And you pull back, and it's in this, it looks like a postcard. The sun is shining. It's this perfectly green little pasture area. The sandwiches are there. The picnic is laid out. His bike is over there. And that, like, that veneer of Americana is there. It looks like a beautiful scene, and it's a goodbye. And, you know, they were the ones who had this engagement, and then it broke away. But for Donna to say that really does feel like an emotionally mature moment, as well as Lynch, like, just digging into that notion of, like, though it looks like one thing, there is something far, far deeper working beneath that surface.
Yeah, and we think of narratives, we think of stories as those kinds of pleasant fictions, right? The Americana, the perfect, you know, bike there, everything framed correctly. Mm-hmm. And Lynch can do that. But stories also have this kind of healing power, not by retreating, not by escapism, but by addressing hard truths, right? That's what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a lot of what's uncomfortable about Lynch, right? Twin Peaks is a story about incest and murder. That is the basic frame of it. So why do we call it, you know, goofy, quirky, fun, like all of these other things?
Yeah.
He's, the most disturbing thing about it isn't Laura Palmer's murder at the hands of her father. You know, that's disturbing when you take it out of context. But it's Bob crawling. Those are the disturbing things, right? The red room, all of these little things that he finds ways of working into our heads so that we have to rework it and rework it. And I think one of the reasons for that is if it's just a story about Laura being murdered by her father, we're able to put it away. We can be done with it at the end of the day. But when we're not sure if her father was possessed by this mysterious Bob, when there's that question out there, the story keeps working itself over in our heads. And in other words, Twin Peaks kind of works as a kind of therapy for us as we have to work through our own things, just watching it. And the watching we do of it when we're away from the TV, the watching we do of it as we just think about it late at night as we're going to bed.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially at the end of 16, Cooper comes into the room and sees that Josie has killed Eckert falls down dead, and sees Josie in this panic, seems like not the right word, like this state of, I mean, I'm just going to go, like, there is this, like, it is a panic, but like a possession as well. Like she is being crushed from the inside.
Yeah.
And I say that because as soon as she dies, Cooper has a vision of Bob. Yeah. Or I don't know if he has quote unquote a vision, but like Bob appears and he is on all fours on the bed, like sneering at Cooper, and he screams, "What happened to Josie?" And just like this glee, this sinister glee. And then the man from the Red Room appears again, just a few seconds. Mm-hmm. And then
dancing on the bed
as he should.
Right.
And then we're back with Truman holding Josie in his arms. And it made me, I didn't like make this connect the first time, but seeing like Josie nervously, like her hand on the wood in 15 and now seeing it again, it makes me think that it's really possible. Like, I want to say that Josie was possessed by Bob. And like Bob, that spirit of evil possesses people and affects people in different ways. where Leland Palmer was very much able to have a kind of like on-off thing and still maintain a strong frame, so to speak, until the pressure got too much. Josie, to me, always seemed like too fragile of a container for that.
Right.
And so, like, would always be on the verge of breaking. And right. Probably why, like, powerful men like Andrew, like Eckhart, took advantage of her and saw her as so attractive, but also what made her doomed.
Yeah. And as I think about possession, because this is always, to me, something weird about Twin Peaks, and not to spoil the finale, but it's not going to be this nice ending where we're like, oh, that's what was really happening. Don't worry, we're not heading there.
Okay.
There's no Agent Scully moment where she walks in and says, well, here's what actually happened.
Whew.
And so how do you deal with stuff like this possession? It seems so weird, but to kind of lean into the reading we've been doing so far on American history with it, I think it can match up when you read stories of people from history committing atrocities, committing genocide, doing evil. How does someone do that? It's so easy for us to just say, well, they're just a bad person. But we don't have their context. We don't have their history. We didn't grow up in that.
Yeah.
And this kind of thought of possession, we're all in a sense possessed by our histories, possessed by the people who came before us. We ended up living out their lives. I'm living out this idea of American exceptionalism. It's not something I ever had to, you know, say, do I believe in this or not? Let me go yes or no, and then I will now bring it in. No, I grew up with that all around me. It's part of the air I breathe. My default is to assume American exceptionalism.
Yeah.
And so that's that kind of spirit of America possesses us all. The spirit of, you know, the Protestant work ethic, the spirit of Western philosophy, all of these kinds of spirits possess us, often for good, often for evil, in different ways. And it's possession is a nice way to think about it, because it's one of those things where it doesn't quite absolve you of your actions. I mean, at the end, are we really looking at Leland and saying, you know, well, he was a pretty good guy after all? Because he does have that nice moment.
He does.
At the end.
He does.
But I think what we feel mostly is sorry for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't imagine getting to a place. Can you imagine getting to a place where you feel sorry for Hitler? You go, wow, what must have happened?
Yeah.
How can he live with himself? The evil that he did to himself as well. I can't, but I like in the narrative that we can now kind of imagine something like that.
Yeah. Even just like walk in that thought for a little while, and to, as he makes a decision, like what are the motivating factors in that decision making?
Yeah.
You can't just explain it away. It's like, oh, he was just evil. Like, no. And Twin Peaks, I think, does a really excellent job of doing that. Like, just evil doesn't cut it.
Yeah.
And it simultaneously like says that, but it also doesn't provide an explanation of like, you're right, just evil doesn't cut it. It's also this. Like, no, it's just evil doesn't cut it, and it doesn't make sense. And that's strange. And that's uncomfortable. And this is that space in which we have to confront that unknown, in which we interact and engage the unknown. And so like Winda Merle, when he's, you know, as he's like training Leo, he says something about, he says, nature is cruel. And to me, Winda Merle seems very much an embodiment of that ethos. Like, nature is cruel and vicious. And in these past few episodes, I'm seeing, like, Coop's been reading a book about Tibet, like, throughout these past episodes. He's just always carrying it with him. And he seems very much in a, like, that proponent of the idea, like, nature can be a force for good. Like, nature is all around us, and nature is something to be embraced, and there is light and life in that. And what is odd, like, the tension is, like, I can find examples where both those are true. And that nature, again, that question of, like, possession, there is a, as much as there is a possession, there is also a giving over to one's, to that, that spirit.
Yeah.
And so, like, Major Briggs, I think, is an example of someone who is seeking a particular spirit and giving himself over to that spirit.
Yeah.
And Cooper is the same way.
Yeah, and with both of them, it's the spirit of discovery, trying to find out things, trying to know what happened. It's this kind of detective impulse.
Yeah.
All right, so before we move on to 17, Josie's story is basically done.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? I mean, it was a strange arc for her. She's one of the initial shots of Twin Peaks.
Yeah. And actually, the second to last scene with her and Andrew Packard, it opens with her looking into a mirror. Mm-hmm. I think she's putting on lipstick or eyeshadow, and it mirrors the exact same shot of the opening of the show.
Yep.
Which I thought was like, I didn't catch it the first time, but it is kind of a nice callback. But also signaling that like, this is over. Like this is the end for Josie. And Cooper says it, I think earlier in the episode, like this is the end, Josie, there are no other options. Like the time has come to face consequence. And yeah, Josie has to acknowledge there is a price to pay for her actions. And she very much believes herself to be condemned and doomed by her choice. Like she sees, it's sad to me that she doesn't see confession as an option for her. She has people who care about her. Cooper in kind of a like law of the universe care and concern. Truman in a very relational, romantic care and concern for her. And yet Josie sees herself as having gone beyond the realm of redeeming. And that's what sucks, is that like she allows herself to be manipulated by the Packards into this basically suicide mission with Andrew. And so that's, I guess, like looking back on Josie now, her arc is quite tragic and is like, I wish things had turned out differently for her. It's sad that they don't. And like, I feel I'm scared to think of where she might be at the end of episode 16.
So we've got a lot of references to mirrors in Twin Peaks. And I hadn't thought about it until you just pointed out with Josie. Mm-hmm. She opens with a mirror, she closes with a mirror, which they mirror each other. Ah, look, mirrors on mirrors, looking into infinity. Mm-hmm. But we've also got the shots of Leland looking into the mirror and seeing mm-hmm. Bob.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a shot of Wyndham Earle in episode 16 looking at a cracked mirror.
Yes. Probably reflecting his own fractured self.
Mm-hmm.
And then mirrors in literature and in philosophy. You know, you've got the idea from Paul that we see now through a mirror dimly, but then face to face, that what we see now is but a reflection. It's not the real thing. And then the real thing will be in the hereafter. Mm-hmm. We've got Thomas Brown talking about death being the reflection of life, being a dark reflection. The entire book Pale Fire, which I think gets referenced in the new Blade Runner movie, which we just watched, is a misconstrual of a Shakespeare quote about the moon stealing its pale fire from the sun, because it's a reflection. It's not all that. And then Lacan's idea of the mirror stage. This is a French psychotherapist, Jacques Lacan, who said that this is where we first find ourselves. This is where we first create something called an ego. So when you look in a mirror and you say, oh, that's me. Basically, I've got a little baby. She's 8 weeks old. She's tiny and adorable. When she looks in a mirror right now, she sees shapes, right? At some point, she will see another baby. And then finally, she'll get to a place where she sees herself. And the interesting thing is, at the same time, she's also trying to figure out how to use her arms and legs, how to poop and pee, how to do all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's all very confusing. It's already very difficult for her. But when she looks in the mirror and finally gets that around 1 year old, she'll go, oh, that's me over there. That person who got it all together. That person, you know, their arms work. Their arms are connected to their body. They don't feel like they're just floating out there.
Yeah.
So maybe I've got it all together. And this is the kind of the ultimate lie that we tell ourselves, according to Jacques Lacan, is that we look in the mirror and we say, oh, that's me. It's like, that's not you. That's just one idea of you.
Yeah.
You are so much more complex than that. And you do not have it together. And learn to be okay with that. And so I like that idea of the fractured mirror for Wyndham Earle. I like the idea that the mirrors in Twin Peaks show us more than what we see, more than what we want to see. They tell those hard truths.
Did I ever mention that you're just like astoundingly brilliant?
No, thank you. Say it more. Say it all the time.
Jason is astoundingly brilliant.
Oh, no. It's pedantic puffery. I apologize.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like even just that idea of mirror and reflection, I remember I helped out on a short film for a week and we were up in the Upper Peninsula in Michigan. And there we were like all staying in RVs and basically like no mirrors for a week. Like we weren't in houses or hotels. And after a week of shooting, and it was wild and it was awesome. And it was after this like particularly rough time in my life. And I was driving someone back to the airport, and it was this long drive, stopped to get gas, and I'm walking toward the convenience store, and I noticed myself for the first time in a week in the reflection of the convenience store door. And emotionally, like I saw myself like I look different. Mm. Like not just on a physical level, but just like that notion of ego and that notion of like I don't look as I last remembered myself. Like I have changed and have gone through something. And just that notion of like the self recognizing itself or recognizing something that has changed or like altered.
Yeah. I remember when I was in college, I was really, really broken up about a girl, and I was sobbing in my room alone. As you probably remember doing yourself at some point in high school or college.
Oh yeah.
And I got the bright idea to say, I wonder what I look like right now. Now, have you ever looked in the mirror when you're sobbing just to see?
I have. It's not great. Actually. It's not.
Okay. So this is not.
I look terrible when I cry. Like I've stopped myself from crying because I tell myself you look like that guy from Bitter Beer Face when you cry.
This doesn't look great. This is not a good look. And it doesn't reflect my real emotions. It looks pathetic and it doesn't feel it. There's weight here.
Yeah. Like we so desperately want to have a veneer.
Yeah.
Because we know, like we see ourselves in the mirror. And so we're cognizant of like, there is an image and I do everything I can to protect and like make that image. Whoa.
Wow. Well, we've wandered.
Yeah.
So let's try and come back and get to episode 17.
Episode 17.
Wounds and Scars. Norma's sister, Annie, a former nun, returns to Twin Peaks, and Cooper falls in love with her. Truman sinks into depression. Catherine is left a mystery puzzle box by Eckert. Plans get underway for the Miss Twin Peaks pageant, and Ben finds an ingenious way to stop Catherine's development, saving an endangered pine weasel. Before we get into it, because I think we might just pass this by if we don't, the mystery puzzle box from Eckert. Is it J.J. Abrams' mystery box? Does it have the smoke monster inside it?
I sure hope so. Eckert's envoy? Like, I don't know what you want to call her.
I can't remember her name now.
She, especially like at the end of this episode, when she slips into Truman's bed, and episode 17 ends with a scene like I have no idea where the hell this thing's going.
Yeah,
and she and Catherine had this really cool kind of like, I mean, chess match. Like I have no other available illustration for it, but it is a chess match between these two very smart, very conniving people. And now that Eckert's dead, like how are things going to move from here? And I don't know. Like I can't trust either of these people, but I don't know what's going to happen next.
Well, then let's talk about Heather Graham. 'Cause what do you think's going to happen next there?
Okay, so I have a theory.
Yeah.
And episode 16, Norma and Shelley are talking because Norma takes a phone call from Annie. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like she says it's kind of this like one-off line. Norma says, growing up, I used to think Annie was like from another world somewhere. Like she just had this kind of like goes to the beat of her own drummer. And like I think Annie has some kind of like mystic. I think Annie has some kind of connection to the spirits in the woods, has some kind of like insight to give, in particular to Agent Cooper. I think she is a key part of the end game of season two.
Yeah.
I think for a character, partially is because I think for a character to be introduced this late into the season, unless she was some, maybe Lynch was laying the groundwork for a season three that, you know, not for 25 years, but like if this was like season three was going to happen in like 1992, like right. Then this was part of that. I don't know, but I feel like she is very much a key or a window into something that Cooper has to learn or something that Cooper is going to see or be revealed to. So I think she's got like a big part to play coming up in the next few episodes.
Sounds good to me.
Cool.
All right. What else about this episode? Cause things are, the plot kind of goes wide and then coalesces and goes wide and coalesces. And we just finished a coalescing. So now we're going to start building again so we can spin everyone out.
Yeah. Yeah. So the major and the log lady come to Cooper about symbols. So the log lady sees the symbols on the major's neck, the three peaks, and reveals that she has symbols of her own on her leg, which she received when she was a young girl. She went into the woods. Turns out that she had gone missing. And she remembers, all she remembers is a bright light. The major, a bright light, Cooper, bright light.
Yep.
And so that's pretty much it. Even like the scene ends with the log lady saying, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So we're very much in an ambiguous state there. Not sure what's going to happen with that. Truman having kind of a breakdown in the Bookhouse Boys Lodge. Cooper talks him off the ledge. In a way, and Truman says, I don't understand. Was it all a lie? I don't understand. And Cooper says, I think we're all like that. And just that notion of Truman, one more character wanting it all to make sense, wanting the truth about Josie to be that she was a good person who traveled across the ocean, who came into his life and was this beacon of light. And the other truth, the like not alternate, not like the Josie was also a person who committed murder, who was duplicitous, who lied. And we have to face that truth about Josie, as well as facing, you know, going back to American history, facing hard truths about our original sins, our original wrongs and deep, deep wrongs. And while Josie, like, yes, she had affection and love for Sheriff Truman, she also like was with these two other men and killed and had all this other to her. And that's what Truman can't reconcile.
Yeah, we want people to be one thing. None of us are. That mirror stage again, right? That mirror thing. We want to look in the mirror and say, yeah, that's me. I'm not capable of evil.
Mm.
Okay, so let's see. One or two last things about episode 17. About Mike and Nadine.
Mike and Nadine, yeah. So that, like, 17 has some of the funniest stuff. Like, I feel like we've gone super deep and super abstract for a little bit. But, like, coming back to just the pure comedy of it, I think their scene at the check-in counter is fantastic. So great. And also the fashion show for the Pine Weasel is just like Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
Like plaid on plaid on plaid on plaid.
Oh, so beautiful.
It's amazing. Like, it's a great just like lampooning of like of that culture. I just not mean spirited.
No.
But just like having fun.
Yeah.
And I think like this for me, like that balance of something very Twin Peaks' ability to balance the heaviness or the like the darkness of humanity with a 2000% plaid fashion show. Like, what other show does that? I got nothing.
And then when Pine Weasels attack.
Yes. Wow. Wow.
So good.
Yeah. So I'd like it, you have that, and then again you have the mysterious woman who undresses and slips into Truman's bed for, it's nothing good. Like nothing good is going to come of that scenario. Truman is in deep trouble at the end of 17, and that's where we end.
And so from here, we're going to go on. We've got a little bit more to cover here, but just a heads up, we're going to cover episodes 18 through 21 on our next one. So Dom, I'm going to make you stop right before the finale.
Yes.
Ooh. That way you can give us some predictions.
Okay.
Tell us what's going to happen here. Okay. Before we do that, though, let's talk about any characters you'd like to talk about and any predictions you have at this point.
The main character I'd like to talk about is Wyndham, I think, because he's a main driver of these. I think he's going to be a main driver of these final episodes. And I'm interested to see how Leo develops. I feel like, because we were talking a little bit about this just off pod, but I feel like Leo is being groomed to be sent on a mission and to carry out a task. You know, Wyndham Earle visits Donna Hayward. He writes the poem and delivers messages to Shelley, Audrey, and Donna. And there's that kind of idea placed about Miss Twin Peaks, that pageant. And so like shit's going to go down at that pageant. Like how could, like we're just Chekhov's guns, not just Chekhov's like arsenal is being laid out.
Chekhov's beauty pageant.
Sure. Yeah, yes. And so like something's going to go down there. And I feel like Wyndham Earle has the potential to make something very beautiful, like a pageant show, a horror show. And like, what better example of like the veneer of Americana to be cracked and laid bare for Lynch than like a pageantry?
Yeah.
Like, because this whole thing that they put into this life, he's just exposing as pageantry, as parading.
Yep. So our colleagues over at West Coast Bias do predictions each week, and they get points for how they predict sports. Am I saying that right?
Sports. Yes. Sports with an S. With an S.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so I thought I'd give you a few points on your predictions. Your predictions, there's even a third one you wrote down, which is that Bob appears again.
Yeah.
You will be awarded no points for saying Bob appears again.
Damn it!
Because do you think someone's going to talk backwards? Is that another prediction that you're going to make? Laura Palmer will be mentioned.
Okay. Yeah. So let me.
And also, we're going to see that bird during the opening credits.
Okay.
So no points for that one.
Touche.
Leo is sent on a mission, and his true nature will be revealed. That's like 200 points. That's a solid prediction.
Okay.
I'm going to give you. I think I'm going to go 300 because you actually went into some depth on the beauty pageant.
Okay.
300 on the beauty pageant. Because that was not just something's going to happen with the beauty pageant. It was. It's all going to happen there. That will be the culmination.
Okay.
Pulling out that thread and saying, okay, here's where we're going. I'll give you some points for that.
Yeah.
And then here's your final one. Cooper kills Wyndham Earl.
Yep.
All right. It's specific. I like it. It certainly feels like it could be in line, and you're stepping out there. I'm going to give you 400 points for Cooper kills Wyndham Earl.
Yeah.
So we will see how those pan out.
All right. I like it.
Do you want me to make predictions too, or should I?
Well, you've seen it. You've seen
right. Right. I feel like I can clean up.
You would do really well. You get lots of points.
Okay. Here we go. Mirrors will continue to be significant.
Ah, and will there be owls?
There may be owls, but they may not be what they seem.
Really?
Hear me out.
Interesting. Interesting.
And my final mirror prediction is that at some point it will become significant that Bob's name is a palindrome. It's a mirror. Mirrors all the way down.
All the way down. Well done.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us on What Exactly Am I Watching Here? For next time, we're going to be working through Season 2, Episode 21. That's right. You're going to have to stop right before the finale. But that's okay. Just like you can binge Twin Peaks, you are probably listening to this in the future. You might be able to binge all these episodes. If you just wait until they're all out.
Yep.
And then you can finish off that finale and listen to them right in a row. But we're going to have a special finale episode that is just devoted to that one episode and just kind of wrapping up the TV run. After that, we're going to jump into Fire Walk With Me, the movie that Lynch made after Twin Peaks was canceled. It's an interesting movie. And so I can't wait to talk about it. So off you go with the Bookhouse Boys. You can get a hold of us on Twitter, where our handle is @OverthinkPod, and find more at OverthinkPod.com. For now, just a quick reminder, you're on the path. You don't need to know where it leads. Just follow.
Jason, may the pine weasels be with you.
And also with you.